Welcome to Mixture Stories, an open-ended fantasy and sci-fi podcast for kids. We have invented a world that our imagination can explore, and you are invited to join us by listening and adding your ideas for future episodes.
In episode 7, we presented the show based on a bedtime favorite that David's grandfather used to tell. Since then, we have decided to periodically offer other bedtime classics adapted to the makeshift stories world. So tonight we present the second installment in this series, based on the 1903 story by Laura E. Richards, The House with the Golden Windows, from her book of short stories of the same name. Richards' tale presents the archetypal irony that the grass always looks greener on the other side of the fence. Episode 10 will pick up from where we left our main storyline. But for now, please sit back, close your eyes, and let your imagination go free as you listen to Episode 9, Orph, the Emerald Planet.
Serene had started taking a late lunch on the pier. It wasn't the carelessly prepared food or the indifferent service that drew her there. Serene liked to hear the waves sizzling on the hot sand and smell the fishy aroma of the seaweed that defined the high tide line as she sipped on her small cup of instant tea. Although the pier was reserved for faculty, it was nothing special. Serene thought that it looked like it had been hurriedly thrown together in the middle of a hurricane by an insane crew of blind, alien desert tribesmen who had never seen an ocean or a pier before building this one. It extended out over the razor-sharp edges of the ancient, wave-worn limestone coast at an erratic angle and made several course corrections on its way out to a rickety platform that now formed what everyone simply referred to as the sea lounge. Its construction did not inspire confidence, and many of the faculty refused to venture out on it for fear of its collapse or fear of falling off its chaotically angled deck. And that's exactly why Serene liked it. When she called a meeting, she often chose the sea lounge as its location, knowing that more than half the invitees would not attend. Unfortunately, this was not the case with her apprentice, Fox. Serene had become resigned to the fact that there was no escaping him. Even if she called a meeting in the corona of a star, Fox would surely risk incineration to go. Despite his constant barrage of irritating questions, she had somehow grown almost fond of him, and today was surprised to find herself actually looking forward to their afternoon meeting. In her history class, they had been studying the incident on Ceres, and Fox wanted to know more about the Sodality. So Serene had suggested that he meet her at the sea lounge for tea. Unstable footsteps on the slippery, creaky boards rudely announced Fox's arrival. He was an hour late. Serene marveled at how Fox still managed to find things that irritated her. He knew she insisted on punctuality, and yet ignored it all the same. Sheepishly, he took his seat. As usual, she had positioned it so its direct exposure to the sunlight limited the length of their encounter.
Fox, I'm glad you finally decided to grace me with your presence.
Serene's voice split the air accusingly.
Fortunately, my other session canceled, and I decided to take in the ocean air for a bit. It's so nice that you came. Now, if you're still interested, I can tell you the legend that Evie passed on to me about the origins of the Sodality.
Serene forced a quick, insincere smile that pushed Fox instantly back into his exposed middle chair. Humbled for the moment, he looked apologetically at Serene. Satisfied that she had exerted her control, she relaxed, taking in the soft warmth of the late afternoon sun, before she began.
As we discussed in class, Fox, there's not much known about the origin of both groups, although they're clearly the same species. Most of what I know came from the time I spent with the Sodality while I was marooned on Ceres. Their leader Evie told me many things about their recent history, but she had only one story from their distant past. It was a legend about a hero named Jermaine, who fundamentally changed the Sodality and has influenced their lives to this very day. Jarmine was not a political leader or a great philosopher. She was a lowly researcher, one of the many thousands that, in those ancient times, had been given the daunting task of overcoming the meager natural resources of the Sodality's small world. The research was so important that the Sodality thought their very survival depended on it, so Jarmine and her colleagues were expected to make great personal sacrifices. Thanklessly, they toiled for endless hours in vast, dank, underground labs, searching for ways to transform their planet. Many gave up all contact with their families and friends so they could focus solely on the great task. Jarmine had spent most of her life dedicated to the project. She had nothing outside it, but allowed herself one small indulgence. After many long hours in the laboratory, she would spend the time she had between work and sleep to drag her stiff, tired body up the many flights of disused stairs to the deserted roof of their compound. There, between a maze of rusting, humming ventilation ducts, she sat, letting the stars empty her mind, their sharp brilliance punching tiny holes through the black dome of the night and through the focus of her overworked mind. And as the day's work receded into the darkness of an unwanted memory, Jarmine waited patiently for the nightly planet rise. Appearing timidly at first from its hiding place behind the eastern cooling tower, Orph would faithfully emerge. Its brilliant emerald oceans glistened with reflected sunlight, coloring the monotone of Jarmine's gray industrial rooftop perch. The emerald planet seemed to flaunt its rich oceans as it drifted indifferently above the harshness of her world, reminding anyone who bothered to look up from their lives of their less than modest means. Some nights, Jarmine felt that Orph had appeared just to mock her and the pitiful results of their terraforming efforts. How she wished she could go there just to see those beautiful lush oceans that seemed to slowly grow year after year. Shivering in the sharp cold of the evening, Jarmine would wait until the brilliant oceans were consumed by the shadow of her own rocky planet in its nightly eclipse of Orph. It was like someone on Orph switched off the glowing oceans every night. And without the light of the sun, they took on the same nondescript color as the many small, scattered seas on Jarmine's world. The eclipse always reminded Jarmine that the next shift was soon to come, and so she would reluctantly leave the roof and head down to the dormitory for a simple meal and to sleep. Jarmine worked for the better part of her life, slowly making progress on the technology to transform the Sodality's home, until one day she made a discovery that would allow the terraforming to finally begin. As a reward, the Governing Council let Jarmine choose her next project, but reminded her that resources were tight and that she still needed to contribute to the knowledge of the Sodality. Jarmine thanked the Council, then directed her team to begin construction of a rocket. This was not an insubstantial undertaking, and it took many years to complete. Had it not been for the rapid success of the new terraforming technique, Jarmine's project would have surely been stopped. But, by the time the rocket was ready, nearly a third of the planet's natural environment had been transformed. On the day before launch, Jarmine walked out to one of the remaining murky brown seas. It was a pleasant afternoon. Jarmine felt free and at peace for the first time in many years. She turned and looked at her footsteps in the dusty soil. They had followed her everywhere in her life, but no more, she thought. Once the terraforming was complete, there would be no dry and exposed soil to record her movements. Jarmine walked to the sea's edge, and feeling hungry, sat down on one of the many sharp-edged boulders strewn on the grayish-brown shore. She ate her protein squares, then taking a water purifier from her rucksack, dipped it into the water and took a long drink from the filtered end of the matte black metallic device. As was the custom, she threw the crumbs of the protein squares on the ground. They were immediately devoured by grateful 10-legged dust lizards, who would someday have no place in the Sodaldi's new world. Jameen stood up and walked back to the launch site. At full planet rise that very night, the rocket was launched, sending Jameen hurtling toward Orf. She had selected a large star-shaped island in the middle of Orf's Emerald Ocean as her landing spot. After a long journey of many days gliding weightlessly through space, Jermaine's rocket safely landed on the beach on the shore of that nameless star-shaped island. Jermaine closed her eyes as she opened the hatch to shield them from the brilliance of the Emerald Ocean. Slowly, opening them again, she looked around. On three sides, a vast plain of nondescript plastic raced off to the curve of the horizon. Directly ahead rose a steep hill, crowned by an immense rusty metal tower. But the Emerald Ocean was nowhere in sight. Jermaine descended a thin set of graphite stairs set carefully into the rocket's ceramic skin. Once on the surface, the eroded rocks and barren beach looked to Jermaine not to be all that different from her own world, but there were no dust lizards there to greet her and play in the shadow of her steps. Determined to find the ocean, Jermaine decided to climb to the base of the rusty tower. After several hours of hot, exhausting climbing, she reached the summit of the island next to the tower's base. As she surveyed the horizon, tears came to her eyes, for nowhere was there a lush emerald ocean, just reflective plastic as far as the eye could see. Hearing the piercing scrape of rusted metal on metal, Jermaine tore her attention away and swung around to face a door that had been opened in the tower base. An old person that could have been a member of the Sodaldi Council emerged, and squinting in the reflected light from the plastic landscape, generously asked what she wanted. "I've come to see the ocean," Jermaine explained. "I've come a long way, but I'm confused. There's no ocean here." The old man laughed and painfully gestured to the horizon with an arthritic hand.
"You must be from the main complex. I suppose, then, that the old transit line is still working. We haven't had visitors here in years. There are no oceans. Are they still telling you that? Are they still telling you that they exist? We covered them decades ago with the heat collection panels."
A younger assistant appeared, and the older man went back into the structure.
"We don't usually get visitors,"
the young man commented as he moved out to stand beside Jermaine.
"Please don't be bothered by his cranky demeanor. Since the Great Collection Project has been completed, no one comes here anymore."
The older man re-emerged from the shadowy interior of the tower and placed a generous lunch of protein bars and tea on the step. He gestured to Jermaine to sit down and stay, then went back to his work inside. The young assistant looked as if he could have been one of Jermaine's co-workers back home. After lunch, he showed her around the tower. He explained that Orf had once lacked enough energy to power their growing needs. In the name of efficiency, this ocean had been covered, turning it into a large solar heat trap. The plastic surface that she saw let the sunlight in, but prevented the heat from escaping, and towers like this one were the collection points. "After all," he said, "truffles can't live on water, so this is the most efficient use of an ocean." He was surprised that Jermaine seemed unaware of all of this, but Jermaine simply said that her work was intense, and sometimes she needed to be reminded of the world beyond her lab. During the tour, they discovered many things in common and became great friends. Then Jermaine finally asked him about the Emerald Ocean again. He nodded and said he knew exactly what she was talking about, but she had come to the wrong place.
"We need to wait until nightfall. Then I can show you what you are seeking."
They went to the top of the power station, and as they were climbing, Jermaine tried to explain to him how the Emerald Ocean looked between planet rise and eclipse. But she was intentionally vague so he would not suspect she was from another world.
Ah, yes,
he replied as they breathlessly struggled up the steep narrow stairs.
I know exactly what you are talking about.
Jermaine's heart jumped. Possibly she had just landed in the wrong spot, and she could still see the beautiful oceans that she had traveled so far to see. Reaching the top of the tower, they settled in beside the warmth of the heating vents that dotted the roof of the narrow structure. The young man stopped and said to wait, pointing to a spot on the horizon where a soft glow could barely be made out. Jermaine watched as the spot on the horizon grew brighter. Then suddenly, the crescent of a brilliant disk edged over the divide between earth and sky. As it lazily climbed into the young night, Jermaine saw her own world, blazing with reflected light that turned the undrained seas into pearls of silver blue. She was struck by its fragile beauty. Jermaine and her newfound friend watched in silent awe until the brilliant colors began to be sucked away by Orff's dark foreboding shadow. After the last of its silver crescent slipped into the abyss of the nightly eclipse, Jermaine's friend turned and spoke.
Someday I'll go and visit those unspoiled seas. But for now, I must work. My maintenance shift is starting and I must go.
Jermaine followed him back down the stairs to the base of the tower. There, in the cool light of the stars, he gave her a photo that he had taken of her world as a present to remember him by. Jermaine thanked him for his time and promised to come and visit again, but she did not tell him what she was thinking of, nor what she now knew. She left him at the entrance to the tower and started back to her ship. He stood there and watched as Jermaine disappeared behind the bridge of the escarpment. He briefly looked up into the now planetless night sky before closing the heavy metal door. Due to the position of the twin planets, Jermaine's trip home was long and tiring, but it gave her time to think about all that she had learned. When she finally arrived home, Jermaine was heralded as a hero for her successful trip and for her past scientific breakthroughs. Her popularity grew, and at last the Governing Council requested a public meeting to discuss her new discoveries. When she arrived at the presentation, the council chambers were packed to the ceiling, and a noisy cheer rose up from the excited crowd as Jermaine walked up to the great council table where the governor sat. She had been a researcher all her life and was not used to the attention, so the noise and formality of the occasion made her stomach tingle with anxiety. Jermaine hesitantly walked up to a small lectern that had been positioned in front of the great table. As was the custom of the period, Jermaine looked respectfully up and nodded her head in silent acknowledgement of the council leaders. Returning Jermaine's gaze from his elevated chair, the council director stared back.
Jermaine, you have become quite well known for your work and your recent exploits, but when you were granted the freedom to pursue your own project, you were also told that you still must contribute to our knowledge. So tell us all what this expensive stunt has taught us, so we may feel confident that our valuable resources have not been wasted.
Silence blanketed the great hall in anticipation of Jermaine's response. With a slight quiver in her movement, Jermaine turned away from the council to face the waiting crowd. I can assure you, she said, that all our efforts were put to good use. I have learned much, but above all and most importantly, I have learned that our world is beautiful and rich with resources if we learn what to look for and how to appreciate them.
Serene looked over at Fox as she finished the story. His eyes were closed and it looked like he had fallen asleep in the afternoon sun.
Fox, wake up!
Serene aggressively prodded. Fox casually opened his eyes as if he had heard nothing. It was not the response that Serene was trying to elicit, and briefly she felt her anger rise. Then, taking a deep breath, she calmed herself.
Evie claims this was a point of divergence between themselves and the Triffle. The Sedali stopped trying to transform worlds into perfect machines, but their cousins never learned this lesson and continued to move from world to world, seeking to perfect their system.
Fox stretched his arms and legs. Then, slowly standing up, he thanked Serene for her time. He started to walk away, but hesitated.
So, if the Triffle haven't changed, what happened on Earth?
Serene smiled, taking her time to answer.
That's a long and different story, Fox.
Serene quickly tossed her notes into her bag and joined Fox for the precarious walk back to the shore.
Thanks for listening to Episode 9, Orph, the Emerald Planet. If you've been enjoying our series, we'd like to encourage you to tell your friends about us. Additionally, we'd like to invite you to get involved in shaping our story by emailing us at makeshiftstories@gmail.com. Or you can visit our website at makeshiftstories.com and add your ideas for future episodes.